Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
You know, one of my favorite quotes of all time is from Saint Augustine. He said once, "Our chief business in life is to heal the eyes of the heart so that God can be seen." Isn't it beautiful? I think that whole idea of opening our eyes to see God at work around us has become something of a mission for me in the things that I write and when I speak, even doing this program. And I think in Dean Nelson, I've found something of a soulmate in his new book, God Hides in Plain Sight, How to See the Sacred in a Chaotic World. He says God can be found in the everyday experiences of life as much as in the cathedrals and in the big stage events. It's good to talk to you, Dean. Welcome to Open House.
It's my pleasure. I'm thrilled to be on your program.
You've said in the book that anyone can see God in the what you call the gee whiz moments, you know, the big evangelistic events, or perhaps even when a miracle occurs, maybe. But seeing God work right now, as we speak, right around us, that's another thing again. Tell me how you cottoned onto this idea of God being, you know, seen, heard, experienced, discerned in the everyday.
I think one of the reasons why I think I see God in the details and in the everydayness of our lives is that that's how Jesus lived his life. And there were occasional big gee whiz moments. There were some miracles, but much of what we know about Jesus was in the everyday, going from one town to the next, in dialogue and in meals and in conversation. I'm just more and more drawn to the presence of God, or having kind of spiritual eyes in that regard, in the nitty-gritty and in the detail. It's like when you get married, there is the big ceremony, and there are those big events, like maybe having children. But really, 99% of marriage is nitty-gritty detail stuff. And for your relationship with your spouse to be really alive, then you have to be really attentive to the details in that life together. And I would just say gradually it dawned on me that that is very much how the spiritual life is as well, that the big moments have their place and they have their value, but we're talking maybe 1% of the overall relationship.
So it really says something about God's nature when we start talking along these lines, because, you know, when you say compare it to the old gods of the Greeks who were, you know, all battling each other up in some sort of celestial world, didn't have much to do with humanity, or whether it be Hinduism or whatever, you've got then this God that comes along in the Judeo-Christian worldview that actually interacts with people in history, in space, in time. He touches matter. Some religions would find that horrific for a God to do, and in the person of Jesus actually comes and walks alongside us. It actually it starts off with that very notion of God getting involved in the details of our lives, doesn't it?
It does, and I think that's one of the things that's unique about Christianity, and I know something about other world religions, and this sort of incarnational God with us and among us I think is unique to the Christian faith. And then if you take it one step further and say, okay, so what kinds of things do we know about Jesus? Well, we know he used everyday, ordinary things to perform miracles. For instance, he used spit and dirt and mud and fish and bread and wine. You know, those were the kinds of things that Jesus used to change the world.
Yes,
that material of the world is still probably the material that that God still uses on a regular basis.
Yeah. Now let's unpack this word sacrament. Some listeners that have come from more liturgical church backgrounds, more high church backgrounds, will very quickly understand what we're talking about. But a whole bunch of others will. What are you talking about? What's a sacrament? And what does it do?
Well, sacraments are means by which people can experience the presence or the grace of God. They are vehicles by which we have this kind of holy or sacred experience. Sacraments are not the sacred thing themselves. They are the means by which we experience something sacred. So, for instance, when we look at something like a sacred meal, like faith traditions would call a Eucharist mm-hmm. or communion. We look at the bread and the wine as a means by which we see the body and blood of Jesus, or the life-giving body of Jesus among us. The bread and the wine themselves are not sacred. They are the means by which we understand something that is much bigger than that. That's what a sacrament is. And traditionally, in the Orthodox Church and in the Catholic Church, there have been seven agreed-upon sacraments, and that's what I wrote about in this book. And then, as you know, I invented an eighth one. And the seven sacraments, of course, are vocation and baptism and communion and marriage, confirmation, confession, and last rites or extreme unction.
Yes, and then you add service onto it as the eighth one. All right, well, let's hold on to that, because we're going to hold that meaning in our minds as we explore some of those. This is Open House right across the nation. Dean Nelson is the author of God Hides in Plain Sight, How to See the Sacred in a Chaotic World. 1-300-40-2020 is my number if you'd like to pull something into the conversation that's in your own mind. All right, you have those eight sacraments. Let's just, for mm-hmm. time's sake, just focus on four of them, because the whole book is filled with beautiful stories that kind of illustrate what you're talking about in these so many ways. But just four, you call them doorways, mm-hmm. that actually open up the way for us to experience God in the everyday. Let's start with the first one, the sacrament of vocation. How can mm-hmm. we see, experience, discern God working around us in our everyday working lives?
One of the things about the word vocation that I think has gotten confused in modern culture is that it is used interchangeably with the word occupation. And so when somebody says, well, what's your vocation? That could mean, by their definition, being a car mechanic or being a plumber or, you know, a salesperson or whatever. Hmm. But in the historical meaning of the word vocation in organized religion, it means to be called, to have a holy calling. And the way that word evolved was everyone had this holy calling. And what I believe through reading the Bible is that the holy calling that is on all of us is to participate in the work of God in the world. And that is to redeem and restore and reconcile all of creation back into its right relationship with God. Mm. So all of us have that holy calling, but it got a little more of an elitist kind of interpretation over the centuries, so that only those who went into professional clergy, for instance, one who would join a monastery or one would join a convent, those were the ones who had the holy orders. And then that set up kind of an elitist hierarchy of spiritual people that I think was not the original intent of why that's a sacrament. Mm. We all have this availability of participating in the work of God in the world.
Yes. Now, for some people who say, yeah, you reckon me as a plumber, you know, or me as a, you know, fitter and turner, or you know, me as a childcare worker, mm-hmm. how does that work? How do you help people to discern that God is actually present in the work that they're doing?
Well, and those are precisely the people I'm talking to in this regard. Yes, a plumber has a holy order. And that holy order is to participate in what God is doing. That can have any number of applications. It could be in how we treat our customers. It could be in how we interact with the environment. You have this vocational call, regardless of what your occupation is. And that vocational call is to be the hands and feet of Christ in the world.
That's a really key point, isn't it? Because some people say, oh, well, mm-hmm. you know, when I'm, taking the welder to that particular joint, you know, well, what's of God in that? Well, there's probably mm-hmm. a lot of stuff of God in that anyway, in the fact that he's actually made you in his image and he's made you to create and work and shape and form things. Mm-hmm. But even apart from that...
Yeah, exactly. And there's a great example of that, and I don't remember what chapter I use it in, of the architect, the British architect Christopher Wren, who, walked around while some workers were building a cathedral that he had designed. And he just asked different members, workers, what are they doing? And one said, well, I'm mixing cement. And another said, I am carving the marble, and it finally got to one guy who said, "I'm building a great cathedral." Mm-hmm. That's where that kind of vocational holy calling comes in. When we're a plumber, we're still participating in that work of redeeming the world. Yes. that God has called us to do.
1-300-40-2020 if you've got a comment on that, love to hear it. You also talk about the sacrament of communion. You've probably got mm-hmm. a broader meaning to it in mind than what a lot of Christians will be thinking, but take us there. Mm-hmm. How we can experience God through that.
Well, I think we all have had experiences where we've been sitting around a table having a meal with someone, and the level of interaction with that person was just so profound that we knew we had connected to something bigger than just that meal. The term I like to use is we encountered a thin space, and one of those thin spaces between the bigger world, you know, the eternity world, and the world of now and the world of the present. And I think we've all had those kinds of experiences around a table where you just didn't want to leave the table because mm-hmm. the level of interaction and the kind of that transcendent quality was going on there. Well, I think those are Eucharistic kinds of moments, and they don't have to be just something that was in a church where a priest or a pastor was in charge of handing out the elements. I look at, again, through in the Gospels of Jesus, after he rose from the dead, he's walking along the road to Emmaus mm. with two people, and they sit around a table, and it was when he broke the bread that they recognized him.
Yes.
Well, my perspective on this is that happens or can happen when we're aware or at least prepared around the tables where we eat many times. Now, you can't do that if you're doing that at a drive-through restaurant or hurrying through something, but if part of the point of getting together and having a meal is to really connect at a deep level, then I think it's possible to have one of those Eucharistic kinds of moments.
Yeah, a couple of things come to mind. One is that it probably reflects, again, the relational nature of God, doesn't it? That's the one of the places
yes.
where he comes and shows up is actually when we're having a great conversation, really connecting heart to heart with somebody else. That says something about God. Secondly, I wonder whether those moments are also something of an intimation of, you know, the great gathering together at the end of history that is talked about mm-hmm. in the book of Revelation, you know, with the great mm-hmm. feast, and we'll all come together, all of those who've accepted the offer, the invitation to come and be part
right.
of that new kingdom. It's an intimation
well,
of that.
And how many times did Jesus refer to himself as bread? Or you see the experience of the feeding of the 5,000. That was a meal. Or when his disciples first see him, what was he doing? He was preparing a meal. There's something very, very holy, or at least there can be, around that very act of eating together.
Yes, Jesus, after he's resurrected, and there he is on the beach cooking his disciples
yeah.
fish in the morning for breakfast. Yeah,
exactly.
Very, very earthy. This is Open House right across the nation. We're talking about just those everyday moments where you might actually be able to experience something of God's work in your life. The Open House website has the podcast, openhouseonline.com.au. Dean Nelson is the author of God Hides in Plain Sight. There's the sacrament of vocation, the sacrament of communion. Now, let's talk about the sacrament of marriage. How can that open up? How can that be a door through which God can walk into our lives, so to speak?
It seems to me that in marriage, here is a relationship, and again, you hit on the earlier point of how relational all of this is, and I think that's absolutely right. That's how we understand and experience the grace of God is brokered through each other, and marriage more than probably any of the other sacraments, where to experience a relationship with someone who will probably know you better than anyone else, including probably your own parents, and then who will love you anyway.
Mm.
That's a profound experience. And then you flip that around to your own what does it mean to love another in a marriage relationship, in that sort of self-emptying, removing the ego from the relationship, which you, in my view, you have to do on a daily basis in a marriage relationship. And by doing that, then you experience pretty much how God relates to you.
Yes, it's a really, really good point. I think of a series we've been doing recently with Rebecca Kanindike de Young on the seven deadly sins, and how pride is actually the root of every single, you know, vice, if we want to call it like that. That sense of superiority, and of course, isn't that the ultimate thing that holds us back from God when we look him in the face and say, I know better? And maybe marriage is that classroom of learning humility and, putting the other person first and, yes, letting go of some of our desires or letting go of some of our wishes to help the other one go on. It's kind of a classroom of humility.
It is. It is setting the other person's interests before your own. And now you know this is a way that you can experience really something very holy is by putting another before yourself.
There's just nothing else like experiencing the forgiveness of somebody that you have wronged. And in the marriage relationship, that happens quite often, doesn't it? Just that immense moment of grace.
I think as I mentioned in my my God Hides book, I nearly ruined our 25-year wedding anniversary. And rather than coming at me with a weapon, my wife just came to me and rubbed my shoulders and gave me a neck rub. I thought first she was going to choke me, and she ended up just giving me a neck rub. And what she was saying by that was, I forgive you. Mm-hmm. And to experience that kind of forgiveness when you know you're the one who screwed it up is a profound, profound lesson. You're absolutely right, in humility and in receiving love.
Then there's the sacrament of baptism, which obviously is a lot more quote-unquote churchy, religious, or whatever, that many of us will understand. But take me on with that, how baptism can actually be an open door.
Sure. I think baptism is a really interesting one because so many people think, okay, well, that's just a one-time experience of you get baptized in a church service or in a river or in the ocean or something. And once you've been baptized, okay, well, then you've had the baptism experience. Well, just like all of these other sacraments, as I'm trying to think about them, I'm saying, no, baptism is something that is a continuous gift, because essentially all baptism is receiving your true identity before God, of who you are. You're made in God's image. And the exercise of being baptized is a ritual that makes that as a declaration. Well, I think there are some ways in our everyday life that remind us of who we really are before Christ. And we're more than our titles, and we're more than our college degrees, and we're more than our professions. And every now and then we need a reminder that says, God loves us regardless of these, what we would think to be achievements or masks that we wear throughout society. Mm. And when we get reminded of those things, then you have this moment of just like Jesus coming up out of the River Jordan, where this voice says, this is my son in whom I'm well pleased. Mm. I think it's possible to have those moments throughout our lives as well.
Absolutely. I mean, the very, very notion of baptism, that we're kind of washed as we go under the water, washed from our sins, washed from our everything that we've done wrong, and then we come up to new life, that death to new life. The symbolism of it is really quite remarkable. And yes, we're actually baptized into a new family, into a new community.
Right.
And so our identity is now as a child of God. It's very, very profound.
Sure. You know, oftentimes when you're a professor or when you're a journalist, you feel like you have a role to play. And after I've been with my friends for a while, I realized they don't care if I have a PhD, and they don't care if I've written for the New York Times, and they don't care if I've written a book. All they care about is that we're friends. That is a profound reminder to me that says, I am so much more than these things that society says, you know, are important. I am loved regardless. That's a baptismal moment for me when I come to those realizations with my close friends or my family.
Nicely put. What's the common denominator to all of this, Dean? How can we learn to open our eyes to see what God is up to around us? Because we so often have got our eyes half shut, they're cloudy. Mm-hmm. Eugene Peterson, who you also love, talks very much about, sin-soaked eyes. You know, sometimes we just can't see what God is up to around us. How can we discern what God is doing?
Part of it is in the assumptions that we live under. If we aren't seeing the activity or the presence of God through sacraments or spiritual disciplines or whatever, if we aren't seeing it, there's a very good chance that we're assuming that nothing's happening, that God is absent. What if we flip that and say, let's operate from a different assumption? What if we start with the assumption that God is at work,
mm-hmm.
and now it's a matter of us paying attention? I think that makes all the difference. I think you're going to be surprised at how many signals and signs that God and evidence that God leaves for us that says He has been at work this entire time.
And then
really, it's a shifting in the assumption that you start your day with.
And any tips on discerning when it's God and not necessarily say coincidence or our wishful thinking?
Yeah, and that's a really, really important point, because anybody listening to this could assume, well, you're just playing a psychological trick on yourself. And, you know, who knows, quite frankly. I am motivated to believe that God is at work, and when I don't see it, it has more to do with my being blind. But I really do think that one of the ways you can start your day is in a moment of quiet where you ask God to show Himself in some way, in some activity, in some conversation, in some meal, to show His presence to you that day.
Mm.
I think if we were to start our day that way, the profound difference it would have in our days would be just breathtaking.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right, too. Dean, it's been good talking to you. Thanks for your time.
My pleasure. I'm thrilled you're interested in the book.
Well, it's a good book, too. Beautifully written. It's called God Hides in Plain Sight. The subtitle is, and pretty much wraps up the whole idea, How to See the Sacred in a Chaotic World.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.